the topics I'm going to speak on today. I'm talking about the recently rejected Software Patents Directive. So the things I want to cover are who says we're better off now? I'm not going to speak just for myself saying I think we're better off now. I'm going to say what players were involved that think we're better off now that the directive has been rejected. I'm going to talk about how the European Parliament voted, what each side was lobbying for, the future of software patents in the European Union, the bigger picture that software patents were part of, and what's coming next. Before I start talking about the details, one thing that has to be realised is that people in Europe, citizens, rarely actually take part in European politics. It's something that happens over in Brussels. It's something we don't participate actively in. Very few of us do. And also, software patents is it's a very obscure subject. The MEPs notice this. It requires understanding of patents, understanding of software development, understanding of software businesses. So it's a obscure subject, and yet we got thousands of people to travel to Brussels for to meet with the MEPs for protests and rallies outside the Parliament. And people got really involved in this, which is an indicator that this topic deserves some special attention. I'm going to talk about why Europeans should be happy. The Software Patents Directive is no more. The original version of this directive would have introduced software patents into the European Union. Now, we've gotten this directive rejected, but the problem has not been solved completely, because the European Patent Office is still handing out software patents. So this problem will come back at some stage in the future. So we're going to have to continue to build awareness about this and related topics. So who says we should be so happy? First off, the United States of America told us that software patents are a bad idea. They might always be good advice on how to run the European economy, but the way they told us is that they have software patents in the United States. So we were able to look at the United States and see how the patent system had worked for software, see what effects it had in practice. So we could take them as an example and decide, do we also want to do this to our economy? Representatives of European small and medium-sized enterprises were quite conclusive that software patents were going to be a very bad idea. Consumer groups were told us it would be a bad idea. And free software organisations, such as Irish Free Software Organisation, Free Software Foundation Europe, and Free Software Foundation in North America, who have been working on this since the mid-80s, they've all agreed that this software patents would have been a very bad idea. For the USA, the best summary is the Federal Trade Commission. The Federal Trade Commission is like a competition authority in Europe. So they're not tied to any company, they're not tied to any specific type of business model, they don't have, their job is not to promote anything in particular. What their job is to make the economy and to make the market function. They monitor interstate trade in the US and what are the problems in the market. So in 2003, they published a report on innovation, which was a 350-page report about software patent, or sorry, about the patent system, every aspect of the patent system in the USA. They had a section about software patents, software and internet patents, they called them, and for the harm to software users and software industry, it listed impeding innovation, impairing follow-on incentives, by requiring patent licenses to build on top of other software or to build related services. It makes it hard to build related industries. Increasing entry barriers, mostly due to the costs of the patent system or the risks involved in the patent system. Creating uncertainty that harms incentives to invest in innovation. If you want to invest in a company, patents, there's no way to tell whether a company already infringes a patent. You don't know until somebody sends you a letter saying you infringe our patent, please cease and desist distributing your software. So this uncertainty makes it difficult to invest in a company because your investment is going to draw the attention of possible patent innovators. Producing patent thickets is another problem. When there is a new area of development, a lot of companies would rush to get a patent on this area of development. And so this would lead to a number of different companies, each having separate patents related to the same area. So if anyone else wants to work on this area, they have to get a license off several different companies, or one company that owns a large number of patents that simply can't be avoided. It also said that defensive patenting is increasing the complexity of patent thickets. Defensive patenting is where a company acquires patents simply so that they can counter litigate from their litigated against. This is for companies that don't actually, they don't intend to use their patents aggressively, but they feel a need. So in a way, they pay a patent tax. But this also increases the number of patents in existence, so that makes the patent tickets worse. The US Federal Trade Commission it also said that companies were being forced to divert resources from research and development into obtaining patents. And this is funny because some people arguing in favour of soft patents said that it increases research and development, it provides a way to get funding for this, but the US Federal Trade Commission says the opposite is true. It says it's making it difficult to commercialise new products, because if you develop a piece of software, you don't know if it already infringes the patent. You can publish your software, and only after the software becomes popular, the patent holder can say, by the way, we have a patent on that idea. The patent lasts for 20 years, so they have 20 years to decide when to enforce against you. The report also said it was raising uncertainty and investment risks. Again, this is about putting money into a company when you don't know. When a company has no money, it will rarely get sued for patent infringement, since there's nothing that can be gotten out of the company. But once the company receives investment, it becomes a target. So this it spoils the model. Like most companies want to, you start off as a small business, you get funding, you go to medium, eventually, hopefully, you become a large company. So this it impedes the normal company growth process. Patent holdup has become a problem. This is where people develop a product and then they can't release it to the market because somebody claims, rightly or wrongly, that they have a patent on this piece of software. And also the higher prices of all these companies having to pay for patents, having to pay a legal team to examine the validity of patents, having to research patents before releasing a product, all these things, the costs of these are being passed along to the consumer. Those are the bad points. Of course, the US FTC report, it also we would have looked at the redeeming qualities. If you have all these costs, what's the point of having these patents? So in the redeeming qualities, they actually had nothing. They had the entire conclusion was negative. So this wasn't a report just on software patents. They didn't have an axe to grind. But simply for software, they found that there was no benefit. So that's the US. In Europe, one thing that interests a lot of people is jobs. The majority of jobs in Europe, I think it's about 75%, are provided by small and medium enterprises. So each country, each member state has a union or several unions that small and medium enterprises can join. In Europe, in the EU, there is a central union that these unions can become part of. So this union is called UAPMI, well that's the largest of them. UAPMI represents 11 million SMEs, which employ 50 million Europeans. And they've said that small firms are concerned about introducing patents for software because it would seriously limit their ability to deliver and it would endanger their survival. So this is 50 million jobs that are represented they're anti-software patent. Consumers groups were concerned about this as well. They said that the proposal as it stands will severely inhibit competition and thus innovation, and it will have many negative consequences for European consumers. That statement was made by BAIC, which is similar to UAPMI. It's an umbrella union for consumer groups in the various member states. Free software groups have been working on this for years. Richard Stallman, who started the free software movement in 1983, he compares software patents to landmines. He says each design decision you make in a software project carries the risk of stepping on a patent, and this can destroy your patent, or this can destroy your project. So Stallman is a notable software developer himself. At the moment, he does mostly political work. So in the European Parliament, software patents was brought to the European Parliament in around 2001. The reason, the justification, was harmonising patent law in the EU, but the actual consequence of the directive was to validate and to legalise software patents. It was a very difficult topic. You know, as I said, it required knowledge of patents, of software development, and software business. So the Parliament deferred the vote on this a number of times, and eventually in September 2003, they went to the vote on it. When they did vote on it, they voted for a set of amendments, and it was a very clear set of amendments which clearly excluded software patentability. Software from patentability. And not only did the amendments get adopted, but they were adopted by majorities of around 75%. So it was a very clear signal from the Parliament. Then in the second reading, which happened this year, we were expecting roughly the same again. But those advocating software patents, they changed their line. Instead of pushing for software patents, they were going to say, this isn't about software patents, this is about computer-implemented inventions. And this is the term, what is a computer-implemented invention? What is implemented on a computer other than software? It's a strange term. It sounds like an invention that involves a computer, or it sounds like a mechanical invention, but it is a replacement term for software patents. And we can tell this because when they changed the term, they then proceeded to lobby for the exact same old idea, which would allow software to be patentable, just under the new banner of CIIs. So this did confused some MEPs. There was a very large lobbying campaign on both sides, and some MEPs were left in doubt. They didn't know. They weren't sure who's accurate. But the line of this isn't about software patents, this is about CIIs, this was a very hard line to keep straight because it's just so contradictory. One example was even the Business Software Alliance, who was strongly pro-software patent, near the second vote they even published a study which started off with computer-implemented inventions are usually referred to as software patents in the United States. So this is completely contradicting our message. We also had another piece of good fortune was a company called SAP. SAP are a large software company. They make database-related products. 2 weeks before the big vote, while the pro-software patent camp were saying this isn't about software patents, SAP published full-page ads in a few prominent European newspapers. Of course, SAP doesn't actually make anything other than software. So when MEPs said to us, this isn't about software patents, we could show them this full-page ad and say, well, hang on, here's a company, a very large company, making nothing but software. Why are they pushing for these patents? So that's what the other side was saying. What were we saying? What we were asking for was, the requirement in patentability to be based on forces of nature or applied natural science. These are phrasings from other countries that don't have software patents. This is how they're excluded. So we said that an idea, under our amendments, an idea would be patentable if it involved a new teaching in forces of nature or if the innovation was in applied natural science. So I'll just give an example of what would fall and what wouldn't fall in that definition. Anti-lock braking systems. This was a famous example in the Parliament. Because cars, they contain sensors, they contain brakes, they contain a lot of computers. So if a car manufacturer develops a new way to slow down a car, if they don't have to change the sensors and they don't have to change the brakes, if the change happens in the software, is that a software patent? And it's not a software patent, but it would be valid. And the reason is that the innovation involves how brakes are used. So it's a new teaching in applied natural science or forces of nature. So anti-lock braking system would still be patentable. For something that wouldn't be patentable under our amendments is XML or computer languages. For computers to talk to each other, they have to speak a common language. So if I develop a new language or a new way of using an old language, would that be patentable? And under our amendments, no, it wouldn't be patentable because there are no forces of nature, there is no applied natural science. Now, why should ABS be patentable and software for the computers to talk to each other not be patentable? So I'm going to just look at the costs and benefits of patents for software. Patents inhibit development. That sounds like a negative thing to say, but that's actually the goal of patents. They also inhibit the combination of ideas. Yeah, I'm not criticizing that. In the automotive field, these restrictions they only affect people who have a car manufacturing warehouse or manufacturing facilities. So this is a restriction on a very small number of people. It's an industrial regulation. It's not a restriction on the general public. In contrast, in the software field, anyone can learn to write software. Anyone can hire someone to write software. It's not an expensive thing to do. People who develop websites, as most of the MEPs have, are software developers. We actually found during the campaign, we noticed that most of the MEPs did actually infringe patents, software patents that were already handed out by the European Patent Office, but were simply they weren't currently valid. So if this directive had made patent software patentable, most of the MEPs would have actually been patent infringers. So the costs when it's applied to patents or it's applied to software is on a much greater scale. It's applied to every individual. Now I said that patents inhibit development, and that's not a flat criticism of the patent system. The reason for this is patents they try to encourage what's called lateral innovation. When you put a block in the way of some of one path, then people have to find a new way of doing something. And hopefully, if enough paths get blocked off, eventually people find new, more efficient ways of doing the same thing. But the problem is, for software, this doesn't really work. Because if I want to send documents to a friend, my documents have to be in the same format that my friend can read. If I develop a super new format, and it's completely more efficient, and it's more detailed, but my friend can't read it, my format is pointless. So my lateral innovation is like a fork in the plug. There's no point in having this thing. Then the benefits of the patent system. The benefits for software, the benefits are not divided evenly. They're disproportionate. Because if the market leader says, okay, I own this data format, nobody can use this data format, then people trying to compete against the market leader, they're going to have a very hard time. They have to not only produce better software, but they have to get every company to switch over to this new data format. We've seen the way word processors, the way web pages, people clump together on multi-technologies. It's called the network effect. Whereas if somebody who is not the market leader has a patent, if I have an application and not many people use it yet, and then I get a patent and I say, okay, nobody's going to copy my format, then nobody cares. The market leader will just continue their current development. They're not trying to compete against me. They don't want access to my technology. My technology is not being used by the market. Their technology is being used by the market. So market leaders benefit, while people who aren't market leaders, it hurts competition in this way. So you could say that like exclusionary tools like patents, they're only beneficial to people who are large enough, people who are established enough to be self-sufficient, to not need the support of other people in the same industry, to not need people to work together. And in this way, because of the network effect, patents in software, they specifically inhibit the development of useful software. Like we were saying about if I have a word processor, if I want to write a new word processor to compete with the market leader, it has to look like a word processor, behave like what people know of a word processor is. It has to read and write the file format of the current market leader, the word processor that people are already using. If my word processor is 100% innovative and doesn't copy anything from the predecessor, if it doesn't build on the old, then it won't be a word processor. So we can see these costs and benefits. We can see this is already played out in the USA. We can just look across. They have a very new phenomenon, and it took them a while to come about. But we're now seeing patent licensing firms in the USA. I call these patent zombies. I'll get to that later. This is a new type of business model, a software business model that involves staying as far away from software as possible. What companies are doing is that they buy up patents from other companies. They often buy them from during the .com. People wrote software and they bought patents. 3 years later, the company's dead or it's trickling along. So there were a lot of software patents not being used by companies because the companies didn't have money or didn't have a product anymore. So we're now seeing patent licensing firms buying all these old patents from the dead and dying .com companies, and then basically hunting software developers looking for licensing fees from companies that are actually producing software. So it's quite a smart model. The whole plan is if patents are so risky, and if they let you hold other people to ransom, then don't develop any software. Or sorry, if software patents are so risky, then the safest option is to not develop any software. So I call them zombies because they harvest the dead and dying. They live off these ex-companies. Some other people call them parasites because they live off the profits of real companies that are producing something for society. So we did a lot of work on this. This was one of the most important projects in the free software movement in the last few years. And afterwards, we've come out fairly well. We haven't got a complete victory, but we proved that we can have an effect. A lot of people thought that the political system would be so stacked against us, because we weren't used to working within the political system. They thought it would be so stacked against us that there's no point in even trying. We should just let software patents into the market and try to think of some marketplace solution. And we figured out that we can make a difference. We can work effectively within the political system. So we figured out how the legislative process works. That was pretty difficult. That was a big barrier. Just trying to figure out who has power at what time, what can they be asked to actually do. We got experience working within the process. We now have people in Brussels. We have national software organisations. We have people networked. They know there is work to be done. Now, we were working on software patents, but this wasn't exclusively about software patents. Software patents was the main focus for the last few years, but it's part of a bigger picture. And what this is creating barriers to participation in the development and distribution of software. Who would want to make barriers to participating in developing software? If you consider the large companies, some are market leaders or those with large market shares, people who are, they can only stand to lose. They're possibly losing market shares at the moment to smaller companies or to free software or to companies that are based on free software. So what these big companies have to figure out is how can they make, or what do they have that they can use that small companies don't? And that's money and lawyers. So the key to big companies continuing to have the same market share is they have to find ways to make software development require money and lawyers. So this is how they protect their current state. In the second reading, the MEPs were contacted by some small and medium enterprises. And they were told, us small and medium enterprises, we want softer buttons. And this was kind of confusing to the MEPs. The MEPs, you know, some of them started to believe that software patents were on both sides of the debate, and you know, some software, you know, some small companies wanted them and some didn't. So there were a lot of MEPs that started to believe that. Now, why would a small company argue for software patents? Well, you can they could want to work with the larger companies. They could be dependent on the larger companies. They could even have business models based on the zombie or the parasite business model I mentioned earlier. But the UAPI, the Union of 11 Million SMEs, they clearly spoke against software patents. So the SMEs, the SMEs were actually the largest lobby group in this debate. Free Software Campaign also participated on a large scale, but most of it was SMEs. And basically what SMEs want is they want to be able to compete in the market, they want to be able to enter the market, and they want to have options for procuring software. They don't want only one company making, or only two companies making, you know, operating systems or office packages or animation packages or, you know, communication technology. You know, they want to have choice in the market. So the bigger picture, the free software often found itself aligned with small medium enterprises because reducing the barriers to entry is something that free software and SMEs both benefited from. So that's the bigger picture. We're hoping for. It wasn't just about free software, but it was about the freedoms revolving around the business of free software. So it was about software independence or software freedom. One of the largest lobbying groups was FFII, and they did a lot of the coordinating work. They did a lot of organising events for the anti-software patent campaign. Now, FFII is not a free software group, but they work with. They're an associate organisation of Free Software Foundation Europe, like the way Irish Free Software Organisation is. And this is simply because we found that, you know, their goal is what they call a free information infrastructure. And their goal of pursuing that, it's compatible with our goal of pursuing permission to write and use and distribute free software. FSF Europe didn't always work directly on this issue, because back in 2001, free software wasn't as prominent, and if this issue got painted as a free software issue, then it would have been hard to build a coalition, it would have been hard to get the companies involved in this, the proprietary software companies, who are equally hard with software patents. So FFII was one of the lead groups in that. It worked with free software organisations, and it worked with the companies, the small and medium enterprises. For free software, we have some free software companies here. We have probably a lot of free software users. Maybe there's some people who aren't too familiar with free software. From the flagship product of free software, the flagship project is the GNU Linux operating system. So this is it's possibly the second most used operating system. It's certainly used by tens or hundreds of millions of people. One fairly popular piece of software we have is the Mozilla Firefox web browser. A lot of people are starting to use this, even though they know that it is free software. And then there's the OpenOffice.org Office Suite. So this is a word processor, a spreadsheet, a presentation program, this sort of thing. So those are three fairly large things that a lot of companies are starting to use now. The reason free software has to be concerned with software patents is, I mentioned the a lot of development models are different. Like large companies can develop software whether the software patents are not. Small companies, when they find it more difficult to carry the costs. Free software is not directly discriminated against by this directive, but it's indirectly discriminated against, because free software mostly relies on the business of small companies, medium-sized companies whose core business is something other than software, and even individuals and college students. they, you know, a lot of people will contribute to free software simply because there is no barrier to entry. You know, also some parts, some packages of free software are written by very large companies, but it's not the majority. I mentioned the consumer organization earlier, BAIC, about free software. They said that open source free software provides consumers with more choice than ever before and empowers creative users to participate in the future development of these products. So this is free software is now it's being recognized by consumer groups, by small and medium enterprises. So what Irish Free Software Organization and Free Software Foundation Europe do is they work to, we try to promote free software, but also we find that the software does a fairly good job of promoting itself. So our focus is on the political side, on trying to ensure that legislation doesn't prevent or inhibit the development of free software. Larger companies tend to have lobbyists, they have advertising departments. These are two things that free software doesn't have very much of. So we need to build up our work. We need to build up our weaker points, because this is where we're going to lose, this is where we're going to have problems. So that's why most of the work that IFSO does, we don't develop software. We try to make sure that everyone else can develop software. We have CVs down the back of free software, and that's just part of one of the values of free software is everyone can walk out with a copy at the end of today. It has the GNU Linux operating system, the Firefox web browser, the OpenOffice Office Suite. So what's happening now? Yeah, so the Software Patents Directive has been rejected. These patents, the actual software patents, they're kind of in a legal limbo. The European Patent Convention says programs for computers will not be patentable. So this seems pretty clear that software shouldn't be patentable, but they're still being handed out. So what's happening is the people who hold software patents, they rarely actually litigate against software developers, because if they bring the patent to court, there's a good chance they're going to get a patent thrown out. So Europeans are fairly safe at the moment. There have been a small number of cases, and each case, the verdict is a couple of pages long, and it's based on a large number of factors. So it's never too clear exactly why a certain patent was rejected in court, but it seems that the courts are finding it in our favour almost all the time, or possibly all the time. So what other problems are there? Now, I mentioned that this isn't specifically, it's not exclusively about software patents, it's about creating barriers to software development. And software patents were kind of the gold medal for this. But there are other ways of creating these barriers. A new one on the horizon is IPRED 2. And this is the second directive on enforcement of intellectual property rights. Those are previous directive, and these directives are brought in with the justification of preventing organized crime, preventing health and safety health and safety risks to the public, and which are mostly people. The European Commission would like to prevent, say, counterfeit pharmaceuticals, counterfeit safety or manual labour materials, things like this. So they're fairly good goals usually. But what they do is what this directive here does is it criminalises almost all copyright and patent infringements. Now, it also criminalises trademark infringements and plant variety infringements, and the intellectual property term covers about 11 different rights which are often very unrelated. What's happening is, at the moment, I think a software developer probably has a 95% chance. If someone accuses them of infringing a patent, I'd say there's a 95% chance that the patent won't hold up in court. Now, if patent infringement was a criminal offence, like this directive proposes, instead of a civil offence, like it currently is, which would mean if it carried a criminal record, then would people take this 5% chance? And if there's a 95% chance you're going to be innocent, but a 5% chance carries a criminal record, the possibility of jail time, large fines, and the closure of your business. Will individuals take that chance? Some will, some won't. Will businesses take that chance? a lot of them don't. So this is this new directive, it's not changing what is patentable, but it's taking all the grey areas. There is certain areas that is patentable, and then there's all these grey areas, and it's making these areas just so dangerous that people treat them as patentable. So these software patents, although they're not valid, they'll be treated as valid. So I mentioned, our work, we have been working in the Parliament. I'm full-time in Brussels. We also have people in other countries. We sometimes work on national law, but we find increasingly our work is related to the European Parliament. So we fund our work with Free Software Foundation Europe and Irish Free Software Organization are both membership organizations. So we fund our work by, we have membership programs, and if people want to support the work that we're doing, then they can join the membership program and encourage others to do likewise. If people want to actually take part in the work we're doing, the best way would be to contact Irish Free Software Organization. So we have monthly meetings, we have a mailing list, we discuss things on. This is how the things we organize are generally organized out in the open. We also provide a contact point for information on things such as copyright, patent developments. We work ourselves on patents, which a lot of organizations find very very difficult topics, and often sometimes we find that we are the loudest or the people doing the most work on our side of the debate. But it's sometimes hard to get, it's hard to talk to the politicians, or it's hard to be recognised as for the work we're doing. So if people want to, would like our input, we're always available. We can contact you to discuss these things. So the contact point for Irish Free Software Organisation is contact@ifso.ie. So I thought I was going to talk on these things here. I discussed why, who says we're better off. It's the free software community says we're a lot better off with software patents, but a lot more than that, it's the US government has said, please don't repeat the mistake we made, and so we've avoided that. It's it's the jobs in Europe, it's consumer rights groups. I discussed how the European Parliament voted. Yeah, the directive is gone now, but it is going to come back. The Parliament, the Commission published a directive because there was a perceived problem. There was ambiguity, there was harmonisation that was needed to be clarified. And we agree this does need to be clarified. For example, the European Patent Office is still handing out these patents. So we'd like to put a stop to that. So this issue will come back. So the Parliament has voted this directive out, but there will be another directive, there will be other things to vote for. I mentioned what each side of the debate lobbied for, and the future of software patents in Europe. Talking about the future, it's never clear. We can see some directives that are on the horizon, but we also have to be ready for directives that we haven't planned yet, we haven't expected. The bigger picture that software patents are part of. I've covered what I wanted to say on that. So we're going to have, at the end of this, we're going to have a kind of panel style questions and answers. And if you have any questions on these things, I'd be happy to answer them. Thank you very much. There's coffee and some biscuits and snacks down the back there. I'm going to go to the next one.
started.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Are
you working for
yeah.
the big
yeah.
chain?
And some other
fine
operations.
I'm